It is 2 o'clock, and it is time for our appointment with the reluctant therapist, Elizabeth Barrett. Good afternoon, Elizabeth. What is on your mind today?
Today, I am thinking about aging, which is not an uncommon theme.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, because I'm turning 65 next year. My husband's already 67, so we're in the swim of getting all of the notifications about Medicare. It's overwhelming. It's one of those things like parenting where people say, oh, it's the hardest job you'll ever love. You know, it's really hard and you can't know until you have kids. And that was absolutely true. And this is another one of those times in my life where people are saying it's so much harder than you think it is. I mean, you think it's just filling out this paperwork and then you've got it all figured out, but it's really hard. But if you do it right, it's really great. And so I've been thinking a lot about what does that mean and what does it look like and how do we protect ourselves. Chris and I have been really fortunate with our health, but in the last few years, there have been a few health scares and some time spent in the hospital by my husband. And all of a sudden, the whole idea of coverage becomes real and wondering what's being covered and feeling like we're kind of at the mercy of whoever is sitting at the claims desk, because there always seems to be a caveat, and that caveat is you're not covered, right? No matter what it is, there's all the things. You have like 25 pages of all the things that they'll cover, and it sounds so fabulous. And then we only have the one thing that they say, yeah, that's not covered. It's kind of like homeowner's insurance as well, that the only time you've ever needed to make a claim, it was an act of God, and it is not covered. And so that's my experience with the whole kind of healthcare world and the idea of insurance and coverage and how to best be covered. It feels overwhelming. It makes me want to run and not think about it, which is not my style with all things. I tend to be kind of a head-on, let's do this. But when it comes to all the insurance things, Chris has always handled it. It feels like too much. So there's that. And then there's the piece of having aging parents and the concerns for them, and are they covered, and do I need to help, and what about when they go to the doctor, and should I be going to the doctor with them as well? I have some friends who go to all their parents' doctor's appointments with them, so I have a second voice, so I think, ooh, maybe I should be doing that. But at the same time, my parents are, very much private, and this is our own thing, and I'm handling it. And so I take that for face value, and in the back of my mind, I think, okay, they're handling it until they can't, or they won't, or they don't, and then what's my role in that? And that feels a bit overwhelming unto itself, and how do I know that they're getting the right information? Because if they're getting all of the Medicare updates and what Part Bs or Ds or Cs that they're a part of, I don't know. And if it's this confusing for me, I would imagine for them, 20-something years older than me, it's got to be confusing. So who do they talk to? And then everyone, would say, well, you're a therapist, just talk to your parents. And I go, I'm not my parents' therapist. I'm their kid at the end of the day. And so there's an interesting hierarchy in that conversation, in that relationship. I get paid to talk to people about really difficult things that they would never want to address, but I don't have that relationship with my parents. And so all of those things are kind of swimming around. And then, of course, having just come through Thanksgiving and meeting with the family and, having some of the elders there, we start to experience what my parents called when they were younger, the organ recitals, where it started talking about everyone's ailments and procedures and doctors and things that are coming up. And my parents are always like, we're never going to be those people. We're never going to sit around and just talk about, what's happening with our medical lives. But you get to the point and your whole world revolves around what different appointments you have. So in my anxious response to all those things that have to do with medical and my own, I would say that I probably, in the normal side, my complete displeasure in having to do anything medical, and I begrudgingly do every test I'm supposed to, and I begrudgingly, go in and, and see my doctor when I'm supposed to. And, you know, I do all that, but begrudgingly. I don't get any joy out of it or leave saying, yay, go me. I've had to go to the hospital more times for, you know, emergency care for my husband or for whatever than I ever wanted to in a lifetime. And it's really hard to hold your breath inside a hospital for multiple days, I will attest. But that would be my preference, is to just hold my breath until I can leave. So having said all that, I know there has to be people that maybe don't get pleasure out of all the conversations around health and insurance and aging, but maybe they have an expertise in that area that might help to calm some of my anxiety and also bring information that would help me feel more prepared. And so fortunately for me, my friend Linda Beck, every now and then will just lovingly send me an email and say, hey, did you see that this thing's coming up or this information is available on aging in the area? And so perfectly timed, Linda sent me a flyer about information about the Medicare changes and Part B's and Advantage or traditional Medicare. And I said, Linda, I think we need to have a conversation. So please come be on the show. And so my guest today is Linda Beck. And we are going to dive into all of these things that are bubbling up for me at this time. I know Brad had a couple concerns he's bubbling with, and we're going to open up the phone lines and let other bubbles come forward if you have questions. Or maybe Linda will just be so efficient that everything that comes out of her mouth will solve everyone's concerns and we'll just go out our merry way. So that is my goal today. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you can reach me after the show by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. You can podcast our show wherever it is you get your podcasts, through Spotify, through NPR, through Apple Podcasts. Just search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Hit subscribe. Leave a review if you might, so we can share the show with other people, and then you can listen at your convenience or share our shows that you find helpful with friends so that you can spread the word and also share any information that you think they might appreciate. So I think I covered it all.
I think you did.
All right. We're going to take a quick break and come back and start our conversation with Linda Beck right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Oh, I could feel the change coming, felt it in the breeze. Oh, I could feel the change coming, coming right for me. Oh, I could feel the change coming, so
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Linda Beck, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
For those of you who haven't had the pleasure of meeting Linda, Linda is an advocate for older adults and their families with a focus on health care and caregiving. Linda also completed the patient advocacy program at UCLA Extension and has worked as a long-term care ombudsman for San Luis Obispo County since 2013. Quite a while. And also, Linda, you were part of the group that developed the SLO County's Master Plan for Aging, which was presented to the County Board of Supervisors earlier this year. I think that's the last time you and I got a chance to talk was after.
I think that's right.
So thank you for coming back.
My pleasure.
For those who, again, who haven't had a chance to work with you, how did you get started in this field? Because you were an attorney for your first career. How did you end up working as an advocate, and what does that entail?
I got into this purely by necessity.
Okay.
I'm an only child. Both of my parents, of course, were aging, as people do. And I found myself trying to you know, hack my way through the thicket, knowing absolutely nothing about their healthcare coverage or how to get things done in the healthcare system and what to look out for and that sort of thing. So it was kind of a natural evolution as I found that I was having conversations with my colleagues in the law firms and opposing counsel and the court reporter about, oh, do you know that there's, you know, this resource available? And people were just, and still are, often just totally unaware of what is available because while we all have to go it alone, ultimately, mm-hmm. there actually is a lot of information and support available.
And so what was the most helpful piece? Because when you came down, your parents passed relatively quickly, right? It's in a short amount of time. What did you find to be the most helpful for you when you first started looking around?
I had to find a really quick access point to mm-hmm. resources on the other side of the country and okay. when my father got sick.
Okay.
And so I sort of dropped in on the red eye into Florida, which I hate, and had to figure out how to get to the hospital, how to talk to the people that I needed to talk to, and how to figure out what the next steps were going to be real quick. Mm-hmm. And I really took a crash course in that and found the thing that was most valuable to me was a local geriatric care manager. And Florida, of course, has lots and lots of people to help older adults and their families. And I was fortunate to get in touch with a very, very well-informed and supportive person. She was a Canadian nurse, and she got along like a house on fire with my father, which was huge, and also was able to steer me through the roadblocks and the little surprises that come up, like when the hospital calls and says at noon, "Your father's ready to be discharged." And I'm saying, wait. he's on this medication. He's got, he can't do this. He can't do that. Where am I going to take him? And the care manager, who I called immediately after that phone call, said, well, they can't put him on the curb. And it's like, oh, that's really good to know. Mm-hmm. So that buys me some time. And then, here are the next steps. So when I was talking to the hospital staff who was saying, he's got to go, I'm saying, well, I don't have any place to put him, and you can't throw him out.
Yeah.
So that, again, gave me time to put the pieces together for at least the interim solution.
Did being an attorney help you navigate this at all?
Yes, and I think the most helpful thing is understanding the different roles the different players have. The hospital is looking to move people out of the hospital if there's going to be any question about whether Medicare will pay for their stay. Mm-hmm. They may be looking to reduce census, the number of patients they have, before a weekend because they know their staffing is going to be short. And those are not the patient's family's problem.
Okay.
And so it's not personal. And it is a matter of knowing the basics of what your rights are in the situation, like they can't put them on the curb, and not letting them kind of buffalo you.
And then just a more practical question. Were you already your parents' health advocate and representative before they got sick? Okay, so how does that get handled?
That got handled informally at first. This was in the days before HIPAA, the Health Information Privacy Act, became such a big deal. Mm-hmm. So if I showed up in the emergency room with my parent and they recognized me and I recognized them, the healthcare staff was very good about being open and providing the information to both of us. The paperwork comes into play mostly when there's some uncertainty about identity or whether the interests of the people are really aligned. It's important to have that paperwork, and I encourage everybody to do an advance healthcare directive if they don't already have one. And it just didn't come up in the time frame that I was doing these initial forays into the field.
But I imagine it would have made it more challenging then had you not had the legal...
And the rapport with my parents.
Yes.
That made a very big difference.
So they were okay with you coming
yes.
in?
Yes.
Okay. That,
yeah.
I guess that would make a big difference.
It really does. And I was very fortunate, and having dealt with a lot of different families and situations over the years, I know that that just isn't the case for everybody.
Yeah.
Which means that it's all the more important to have, as the older adult, to have identified your wishes and documented them. If you don't want your kids anywhere near your health care, and there are some folks who don't,
right.
well, then find somebody else that you do trust to make those decisions for you and get it in writing.
So some people do, is it like having a trustee for your health? Or what is that, if you use someone who's not in your family to be your health advocate?
There's no requirement for a particular kind of relationship other than this is the person I am naming in my advanced health care directive as the person I want consulted if I can't make my own decisions.
Gotcha. So it's been a few years since that. What has changed in the world of caring for those who are aging in the healthcare systems and just in opportunities or services? And you can start wherever you like, because I think that's our whole focus. And if you're just tuning in, my guest today is Linda Beck, who is an advocate for older adults and their families with a focus on healthcare and caregiving. And so that's what our focus is today. And I'm just going to follow you, honestly.
Okay. When we first talked, Elizabeth, you indicated that you'd like me to talk about Medicare a little. You'd like me to talk about Medicare. And that is a vast subject that we can't possibly cover in the time that's available. But
okay.
I did want to tackle it by providing kind of a 300,000-foot look at the
from the drone perspective.
The drone perspective, exactly, of the issues that come up initially as people are looking to get into Medicare and are looking at the different options. So I just would like to talk about that for a few minutes.
Okay.
It's kind of a way to get people oriented to a decision tree. You know, you can go down one road, which is traditional Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
You can go down another road, which is Medicare Advantage. And so I just wanted to start by talking about that a little bit.
Okay.
Medicare is the federal government's health insurance program for people over 65 and younger people who have specific disabilities. For instance, if you have end-stage renal disease mm-hmm. and are on dialysis and are less than 65, you can still get Medicare. Same if you have Lou Gehrig's disease. And the insurance covers hospital and medical expenses. It's in contrast to Medicaid, which is an income-based, income-qualified-based benefit for low-income and people who don't otherwise qualify for Medicare.
Okay.
So we're not going to talk about that one because mm-hmm. it's a whole different ballgame.
Right.
So at this time of year, people, as you said, are getting inundated with information about Medicare and Medicare Advantage plans.
Yes.
So that's because it's open, what's called open enrollment season, not to be confused with open season for hunters on any particular species, but it's important to understand what you're looking at when you get that material. Traditional Medicare was first set up in 1965 as part of the whole Older Americans Act, Social Security, and has been in place since that time. It's considered one of the untouchables in Washington, D.C. And then in 1997, The government started experimenting with privatizing part of Medicare, and they set up what are called Medicare Advantage plans. Those were fairly quiet until about 2003, when the program was expanded dramatically. And essentially what Medicare Advantage provides is coverage through a private for-profit insurance company. And the structure is fundamentally different from what you get under Medicare.
Okay.
So let me talk about that a little bit. Traditional Medicare covers hospital and medical expenses.
So not doctor's visits?
Well, no. Medical does include doctor's visits. Yeah. So hospital is what they refer to as Part A. That's if you're actually an inpatient at a facility.
Mm-hmm.
Part B covers your routine medical care as well as the aftercare for an acute healthcare episode.
Okay.
For want of a better word. There is no coverage for medications, for vision care, or for most dental services.
Okay.
And there is no coverage for long-term care. This is something that I run into often. People will say, oh, Medicare will take... No, Medicare will not provide long-term care for someone who needs round-the-clock supervision, assistance with medications, assistance with what are called the activities of daily living, things like bathing, dressing, toileting, medication management, things like that.
Mm-hmm. That is not covered in A or B.
Correct, and or any other part of Medicare. Because Medicare is, because of those exclusions from the program, many people buy a separate policy to cover their prescription medications. That's what's called Part D. And then in addition, a lot of people buy what's called a Medicare supplement, which is designed to fill in the gaps in the coverage you get through Medicare. Because even under Medicare, there are things like deductibles and copays, just like you have under any other health insurance program.
So it's not free.
No, okay. No, it is not. That's another good myth to knock down. Providers, a Medicare patient can see any Medicare certified provider or go to any Medicare certified facility in the country.
Okay.
There are no restrictions on that. And most facilities and most providers are certified to participate in the Medicare system. The cost, Part A is generally free. If you have worked a certain number of hours over your lifetime, because if you look closely at your paycheck, one of the standard deductions is for Medicare. So it's not free. You've paid for it.
Okay.
Part B comes with a standard monthly premium. It's about $202. That may be adjusted depending on the individual's income. There are separate premiums for the Part D and for the Medicare supplement. Getting enrolled in Medicare does not end your medical costs.
It just stabilizes it then maybe in some way?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. You're probably wondering what happened to Part C.
Well, I was going to ask, but then...
Well, there actually is an answer for that. That's where the Medicare Advantage plans are slotted in. And as I think I said, those are insurance policies issued by private insurance companies. They cover Part A and Part B. They also cover medication, vision, dental, and sometimes other benefits like gym memberships. Mm. So they're very appealing to a lot of people for those reasons. And sometimes the costs of those policies are less than you would actually pay for Part B. Now, you cannot buy supplemental coverage if you're on a Medicare Advantage plan. The cost varies by plan. And probably the most important things that I would want people to know about Medicare Advantage is that it's a managed care plan, which means that they have a limited network of providers, and you have to stay within that network, just like you did under your employer-sponsored health care, to get the maximum benefit under of your insurance.
As opposed to Medicare traditional, as you said, it's covered just about everywhere, every provider and institution.
Exactly. Okay. And that's a particular issue in our area because, you know, we've talked about before that San Luis Obispo is kind of a healthcare desert. We don't have a lot of providers to start with, and not all the providers we do have participate in the Medicare Advantage plans, because very often the reimbursement is lower than that, what they would get through Medicare, and the administrative process is often more cumbersome. Other concerns I have about Medicare Advantage plans is that they are sold on a commission basis, which means if you are talking to an independent insurance agent, they have skin in the game. Their recommendations may be slanted towards the things that would provide the plans that would provide the highest commission for them. I mentioned the issue with limited networks of providers and hospitals. We're starting to see articles about whole hospital systems, not in this area but elsewhere, that are opting out of Medicare Advantage plans because it's just too much of a hassle.
So the part you haven't mentioned, though, is the long-term care. Does Advantage cover that?
No.
Okay, so that doesn't even... No. Touch that piece of it.
Exactly.
Because I would imagine that would be one of the more hefty costs that people face as they age. Where does that come from?
Well, that comes from one of three places. Private insurance. You can buy private long-term care insurance. And that's, again, a whole nother topic.
That's fair.
But I'll provide some resources where people can get this information in as gritty a detail as they would like it, because there is a lot to know. The second place is out of pocket. And just in our area alone, a board and care facility, which provides often very basic accommodations, meals, and personal care, starts at about $5,000 a month, and it can go up to $14,000 or more.
So what about when people, they say you have to spend down all of your assets, and then how do you get cared for?
That's the third.
Okay.
Perfect question. That's the third source of payment for long-term care is Medicaid or Medi-Cal in California. And the spend down provisions are very complicated. Anybody who's looking at that issue should talk to somebody with expertise in the area. California has gone through, in the past few years, a change from having an asset limit of under $10,000 to an asset limit of over $100,000 to no asset limit at all. And now, starting in 2026, they are bringing back an asset test, which means that people who are relying on those benefits are going to have to requalify, and it's going to be a tough process for some folks. Those are the three sources for long-term care.
Okay.
We also have talked about the fact that if someone is still working or is covered through an employer-sponsored plan,
yes,
strongly encourage you to talk to one of the benefits advisors, because those plans interface with Medicare and Part D and Medicare supplements in different ways. So that's a conversation that really everybody should have before you retire.
Okay. All right, because while you're still working, you're still covered by the
employer-sponsored plan.
But you still have to be signed up for Medicare, but you're still being covered by the plan, which is also...
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it's... Right. Logic does not apply. Medicare has its own special logic.
If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we are in conversation with Linda Beck, advocate, ombudsman for older adults and their families, with a focus on healthcare and caregiving. And today we're doing an exploration, a short one, of the Medicare word. We're also going to have a conversation about how you can be supportive of aging parents, especially during the holidays when you get a chance to check in and see how they're doing. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back after a quick break to continue our conversation.
And thank you, Elizabeth. Today is Giving Tuesday, and we want to invite you to join this national movement to support charities by including KCBX in your year-end giving plans. KCBX operates with the financial support of listeners like you, of course. And if you donate today on Giving Tuesday, you can also nominate another local nonprofit to receive a $1,000 marketing grant courtesy of KCBX. So visit kcbx.org or call us at 800-549-8855 for more information on Giving Tuesday. And just a quick reminder that even if you're listening to us on a recorded of this recorded version of this program, it's always a great time to support local public radio, and you can do that at kcbx.org. We'll return with more of a conversation with the reluctant therapist right after this.
Don't let us get sick. Don't let us get old. Don't let us get stupid. All right. Just make us be brave and make us play nice. Let us be together tonight. The sky was on fire when I walked to the mill to take off the slack. My friends and the troubles they've had to keep me from thinking of mine. Don't let us get sick. Don't let us get old. Don't let us get stupid. All right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. My guest is Linda Beck, advocate for older adults and their families, with a focus on healthcare and caregiving. And we started off the show today kind of working our way, as Linda said, a drone's eye view of Medicare, because it's much more nuanced. But we wanted to share some information that might be helpful to start conversations elsewhere. You're also invited to be part of our conversation at 805-781-3875.
So a couple of things I encourage people to think about when they're making that initial decision of whether to go with traditional Medicare or Medicare Advantage is to look closely at the provider network in your area.
Okay.
And figure out, based on what your current health status is, what providers you must have access to. Mm-hmm. And if they're in the network, great. If they're not, think about whether you are prepared to pay more for those services or whether you want to go with traditional Medicare, which gives you a broader panel of providers.
But with the traditional Medicare, are you getting less benefits then?
No.
Oh.
No. Well, let me restate that.
Okay.
You're getting the same hospital and medical benefits. The difference is in the dental, the vision, and those kinds of care, because it's very important for some people. It's not so important for other people. So it's really an individual assessment of where you are.
So if you have traditional Medicare and you get your, you know, yearly eye exam or your dental, do you out of pocket all of that then?
Yes, okay. Unless you've bought another policy to cover it.
But it doesn't have to be Advantage. It can be something totally separate.
Correct.
Like, can you go directly to Delta Dental?
Yeah.
Or okay.
Yeah. Right. Or to Vision America or VSP one of the other.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
The thing to know is that you can't mix the two, Medicare Advantage and traditional Medicare.
Right, you are one path or the other.
Yes. Now,
that.
you do. There are times when you can change from one to the other. Mm-hmm. There can be costs associated with that. So it's something you really want to think about. But once you've made your election, you're locked in for the year. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty tough to jump ship halfway through. So that's something that people really need to consider when they're looking at these choices and not just get focused on the benefits or the most interesting or compelling ad that shows up mm-hmm. in your mailbox.
They are good.
They are very good. And that tells me that they're putting a lot of money into promoting them, which is telling me they make a lot of money.
Yes.
So I wanted to talk briefly about some of the resources for getting into this area more deeply. And there are several official sites. Medicare has its own website, which is actually pretty good. It's pretty user friendly. It provides very detailed information, getting started with Medicare, what the costs are going to be, and what your rights are as a Medicare consumer. Mm-hmm. There's the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which essentially interprets what Medicare is doing for the rest of us. The Social Security Administration website also has information on Medicare eligibility and enrollment. And there's a program that is extremely valuable for folks going through this process called the Health Insurance Counseling and Advocacy Program, affectionately known as HICAP, H-I-C-A-P.
Oh, I've heard that.
Yeah, and it's part of the Area Agency on Aging. Mm-hmm. It is free to consumers, and they can provide unbiased information on the different plans that are available to you, whether you're in traditional Medicare or looking at Medicare Advantage. If you give them a list of your medications, they can look at the available plans and tell you which are going to be the most cost efficient for you at the beginning of each year in time to go through the enrollment process. So those are a couple of places to where people should start. There's also the Center for Medicare Advocacy, which is a private organization, and they too provide a lot of information on your rights as a Medicare consumer or a Medicare Advantage consumer, and the appeals process. And mm-hmm. This is something a lot of people don't know, which is that you've got the option of appealing many of the decisions that affect you. For instance, if you're in the hospital and they make a determination that you no longer qualify for acute medical services and you don't agree with that determination, you can appeal it. And it's a very easy process. It's a phone call. So when you are handed those notices in the hospital or in a skilled nursing facility, take time to read them because the deadlines are usually pretty short.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to get
the
appeal deadlines, mm-hmm. and you want to make sure that you get that process going. There are actually five levels of appeal in Medicare, and so if you don't win at the first one, you push it to the next one. The statistics show that consumers usually do pretty well if they push past the second level of appeal.
Okay,
so something to keep
those
in mind.
Those are great helpful tips. We have a call.
Mm-hmm.
Jumping into the caregiver part. Are we ready to go?
Let's
there?
Go.
All right. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And Sean, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hey, I just wanted to say if anybody is expecting there to be a safety net out there when your elderly loved one falls, get ready to hear the big splat because there is nothing.
Oh, no.
My mother was working on dementia before she had a stroke in May. Now she needs 24-hour around-the-clock care. And as a result, I'm living in the living room of her 55-plus retirement community because there just is not any, I mean, I can't afford, like your guest said, $5,000 a month. I mean, that's minimum to get that kind of care. And yeah, if I wanted to live under a bridge and somehow also work full-time, I can manage that. But I mean, I'm open to suggestions. I'm also highly ADHD, so I'm going to be glad that this will be recorded because I can go through and really parse the whole thing. But I've looked into a lot of options, but man, it's a bear.
It is.
Thank you, Sean.
To put it very politely. Mm-hmm. And one of the things you're up against, of course, is the level of care that your mother needs. With dementia, she may need only what's called custodial care, which is help with her with feeding and dressing and bathing, things like that, and not skilled care. If she needs skilled care, you may be able to get her into a skilled nursing facility, which mm-hmm. would be paid for by Medi-Cal. And there's a whole process of qualifying for that program. A lot of people go into skilled nursing for rehabilitation. And depending on their condition and their outside resources and so on, it ends up making more sense for them to stay there on Medi-Cal, which they can apply for when they get to the nursing facility.
So is there a place for Sean, is there an advocate for someone like Sean to actually call and help walk him through all of this?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Be ready, Sean. Here's your info.
you can call the Ombudsman Office, the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Office, if you're in San Luis Obispo.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Call us at 805-785-0132. And we can help walk you through some of this and kind of get you pointed in the right direction.
Well, that would be great. Yeah, my mother is still a vibrant person. You know, she does need help eating. She went somewhat blind, mostly blind because of the stroke. So, you know, she's pretty helpless, but she's also vibrant and still alive. And the most recent crisis is that she took her debit card down to the casino and spent $900, which like is her entire monthly budget. So, we've got to manage these crises.
And, yeah.
You know, I would love to get her one of these long-term cares, if she skilled nursing things. I mean, that's a bed, you know, I mean, it's a hospital bed. There's nothing in between independent living and hospital bed, you know, except one of these $5,000 a month places.
It's very frustrating, particularly in this area. There aren't a lot of options, and there certainly aren't options that are appealing to everyone.
Yeah. Well, I hear the frustration in your voice, Sean.
It's not. I was not envisioning myself living in her living room.
Of course,
you know? No. It's just not the ideal situation.
Absolutely not. And I hope that I'm glad that you're laughing because that tells me that you're able to kind of keep seeing the motion forward. But also make sure you find those few minutes for yourself every day because caretaking, I think, in many ways, is more stressful for the caretaker than the person who's being cared for. So I want you to be kind to yourself.
Yeah, to the extent that we have qualified for IHSS, we get 20, which is in-home health services for those that are listening. We get 20 hours a week of that, which gives me some respite.
Great.
Not a big deal, but at least a little bit. And so, we could use a little bit more of that. And I've got some, I went through Hospice of Slow, who everybody in the world recommends, and they're just fantastic, and they recommended some other things that I have not yet followed up on. So.
Oh, well, go you for taking advantage of it. And that number, again, that Linda offered was the long-term ombudsman locally, 805-785-0132. I'm wishing you the best, Sean. Thank you so much for calling in, and to your mom as well.
Thank you. Have a great afternoon.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and our number is 805-781-3875. So, Linda, let's dive into kind of what Sean is experiencing, people coming home
for the holidays
and finding things have changed with their parents. Where do you go from there?
Well, it's not uncommon. Mm-hmm. The first thing to realize is that if your parents are declining, they may go to great lengths to camouflage that.
Okay.
So it really is a matter of observing what's going on, listening to your parents. Are they talking differently than they have in the past? Are they dressed neatly? Are they bathing regularly? Is the house a disaster area when it used to be pretty well organized? All of those can be warning signs that things are not going well. I used to go to my mother's house and, you know, take a look in the refrigerator, and there would be a jar of peanut butter. She liked peanut butter. It's not, however, a balanced diet. So it told me that I needed to work on getting a more diverse variety of foods into her refrigerator. And we did that, you know, various ways. A weekly shopping trip, grocery delivery now is a great option. But really, it is something that I encourage people not to ignore, because the sooner you start working on the situation, the more options you have. I'm glad to hear that Sean's mother is in an assisted living facility. That's a good sign, because it means that they were planning ahead to a certain extent. One of the issues, though, with assisted living is that the rates go up every year, and there is no cap on how much they can be increased. So it's not necessarily the long-term solution that people think that it might be. Mm-hmm. As far as addressing the issues that you find when you go home, so, you know, what can you do? Talk to your parent about what you see. If you can start the conversation, you can offer assistance. Be specific. You know, would you like me to take you to the supermarket once a week? Would you like me to come over once a month and go through the bills? There are a lot of processes that are available to support that kind of interaction. For instance, you can designate a third party to be notified if your utility bills aren't paid, or if your insurance bills aren't paid. And if you can get your parent to go through that process, it takes a lot of the guesswork out of it. And that isn't always an option. You know, sometimes you have to be a little stealthy and, you know, flip through the mail to see if there are past due notices, to see if there's an unusual number of solicitations from charities or the casino in Sean's case. Yeah. So you want to make sure that you're picking up on the information that's available to you when you're together. And if you can start the conversation, you know, terrific. Learn about the local resources. One of the biggest issues here, for instance, is transportation, mm-hmm. getting people to their healthcare appointments, and much less getting out for social activities or things like that. But we do have some good options, and they all come out of the 211 system, which is the general phone number for information on county services, countywide services.
So just San Luis Obispo County?
Yes.
Okay. We don't know if Monterey or Santa Barbara is covered with that.
They have a similar system.
Okay.
And the trick is finding what that, you know, three-digit number mm-hmm. is in your area. Mm-hmm. Because once you figure that out, then you have access to everything that's available. There are people who know these systems and can help you figure your way through them, so that you don't have to do it yourself starting from square one.
I would imagine that for people who are aging, the fear is that someone's going to come in and remove them from their home. And so, of course, they're going to mask troubles. How do you bridge that? That it doesn't mean that you have to leave your home if you need help with the bills or with cooking or with cleaning. How Right. That would feel important to talk about.
Absolutely. And the national trend is that people want to stay in their homes. Mm-hmm. And the best way to make that happen is by providing the services that people need, that just the little things, sometimes like changing a light bulb. My mother, the hinge point for my mother was when she went up a ladder to change a light bulb in a ceiling fixture and missed this stair coming down, broke her arm. It was her dominant hand, so she couldn't eat, she couldn't cook, you know, all of that. So finding the people to do that sort of thing for you is important. Mm-hmm. Very often it's just the little things like that. And we have a great resource in what's called CAP Slow, which is Community Action Partners of San Luis Obispo County. They can come in and do things like grab rails in your bathroom, ramps to get in and out of those multi-story buildings. Mm-hmm. Think about whether you might want to move into a single-story place at a time when you still have the ability to make the transition and engage in your new community. So again, the earlier you can start looking at these things and thinking about them, the better.
Is there any assistance for people who want to age at home? Does that make sense?
It does, yes. Okay. It's called aging in place. Mm-hmm. And as I said, it's very common. The vast majority of people say they want to stay there with their things and their pets and their plants and all that. Again, CapSlow is a terrific resource for a lot of those things, and you combine it with other services like Meals That Connect, which will bring nutritious meals to the house every day or deliver a week's worth, so that you don't have to worry about getting out to the grocery store. There are groups like, I think it's now called Village Movement Slow, which provide volunteer services to do those light bulb changing tasks, mm-hmm. and things like that, your fire alarm or your smoke alarm, as well as transportation and companionship, which is huge.
That was going to be my next question. How do we help people stay connected if they're losing mobility or they stop driving or they've lost interest in the things they used to do? How do you navigate that?
Well, it's certainly one of the most challenging parts. Transportation is a big chunk of that. How do you get to the movies? How do you find your way to to church? That's another one. And I always encourage people to just start asking the question. Churches very often will have a rideshare system, mm-hmm. Where somebody nearby will pick them up and take them to church, and maybe somebody else brings them home. But it is important to continue to participate in those things, and there's no one size fits all. For some people who are adept with technology, the internet is a fabulous resource. You can Zoom or FaceTime or what have you. Just picking up the phone sometimes, and that goes to, again, knowing what the resources are. If a person is hard of hearing, there are free telephone devices that will make it possible for them to use the phone. There are free library lending services for recorded books and that sort of thing, so that you can still be in contact with the community, even if you can't leave the house.
Mm-hmm. And so in our final closing minutes, what are some things that I didn't ask that you would like to share?
I think the most important thing is that there are an enormous number of resources out there. The trick is finding them. And what I'd like to do is send you a list of some of the sites that I've mentioned, mm-hmm. and some other resources that I've put together over time. For people who read a national newspaper, both the New York Times and the Washington Post have regular features on aging issues, directed both to the aging adult and to their families. we have caregiver resources as well, which I was going to mention to Sean, because it's, as you said, it's tough work for everybody. And we're seeing people who are not only in the sandwich generation, but they're in a triple layer sandwich because they've got their own children, sometimes their own grandchildren, and their parents. And that's a whole lot to juggle. There are caregiver support services. There are mental health services for older adults. And for people dealing with a loved one who has some form of dementia, I really encourage people to contact the Alzheimer's Association, because not only are they a source of excellent information, their support groups, which are either online or live, are a great opportunity to learn from other caregivers, which is really the best source.
Yes, and people who you can relate to and are in there with you. That's priceless.
Absolutely.
Linda Beck, thank you so much for being my guest today. If people want to learn more, is the ombudsman number a place where people can start and then be sent to other resources?
Yes, it's a good starting point.
So that number is 805-785-0132. You've been listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can find me at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. For more information, I'm happy to connect you with Linda and some of these resources. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and you can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org and podcast as well. As always, thank you for being a part of our community, tuning in and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Oh, I can feel the change coming, felt it in the breeze. Oh, I could feel the change coming, coming right for me. Oh, I could feel the change coming, saw it on TV. Oh, I could feel the change coming, saw it staring. Straight on down the line, masquerading like you was a friend of mine.